Hello and welcome to Carefully Considered, the podcast about caring, the issues unpaid carers face and how we solve them. I'm Katie, an unpaid carer and the founder of the We Care campaign, grassroots organisation empowering unpaid carers to feel visible and valued.
And I'm Laura, also an unpaid carer, and we're here to inform and hopefully entertain you. Each episode we'll be talking to an expert to get their views to see what we can all do to get the change millions of carers across the UK need. Right, Katie, as usual, let's get started. But first, what's been happening in your world? It's always an exciting update we get from you.
So caring-wise, we've had hospital trips, gutter replacements, booking our COVID and flu jabs, which important, isn't it, this time of year. A few curtain repairs for my mum, which is a big issue, as we all know. And then I've been to Parliament, to actually into the chamber, to listen to a debate that we helped organise some work for. So that was really amazing because I've never been in there before.
See, moving and shaking as usual. Actually, speaking of going to Parliament, this is, I guess, a good link to introduce our guest.
It really is, isn't it? So I'm delighted to welcome our guest today, Ruth Hannan, co-founder of Careful, an organisation that aims to create a space to expand our ideas about the role of care in a new economy.
This promises to be very interesting. I want to find out more about this. Welcome, Ruth. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with the basics, I guess. How would you introduce yourself to a stranger sitting next to you at a dinner party?
Oh, crikey. I'm never very good. I'm never a formal person, so I never tell people what I do for work or anything like that. I just say, hello, I'm Ruth. And then they usually say, oh, what do you do? And then I go into my preamble. and I suppose now I say, because we're very new, we're careful, we started at the beginning of the year. I say I've started an organisation to, and now I think I've jokingly started to say start a care revolution, just to sort of shake things up a little bit. So that's how I often introduce myself, because it gets people talking as well.
Oh, we love a bit of a revolution. Anything like that sounds right up our street, doesn't it, Laura?
Yeah.
Can we then have a quick sort of overview of your career to date then, Ruth, just so we've got a sort of bit of a background of what you've been and done, and to get you to this point?
I'll keep all the irrelevant bits out and just focus on the relevant bit. But I mean, probably for maybe 20 years now, I've worked with carers. So I used to work locally doing carer support in Manchester. That's how I sort of started out, working with carers of people with severe mental illness. And from there, kind of worked in local carers services and then went on to work nationally at Carers Trust. And I led a programme of work called the Triangle of Care, which was very much focused on kind of system change in secondary mental health services, founded by, you know, created by an amazing carer called Alan Worthington. Highly recommend people check out Triangle of Care, one of my proudest pieces of work, I would say, and I don't say that very often. And then sort of from there, I made the sort of strange sidestep into the world of think tanks, which, if I'm honest, I didn't really know what a think tank was, at the RSA, which is where I met my co-founder of Careful, Hannah Webster. So we worked together there for 4 years, nearly 4 years. Yeah, that was a very little tiny bit of my career. I won't tell you about when I worked in a butcher's as a teenager.
You gotta start somewhere. Is that why you decided to found Careful? I mean, was there a specific catalyst, or did all your time in think tanks sort of bring about your desire to bring about this sort of care revolution?
What I would say is the catalyst was meeting my kindred spirit, Hannah Webster. We started to work together. We inherited a team, at the beginning of the pandemic. Imagine you're asked to act up into a team leading role as everybody goes into lockdown. Amazing. And we said, we said we don't feel like we should do it on our own. We want to do it together. We want to co-lead. So we started to co-lead this team. And the work that we were doing was looking at, we were developing an idea around participation. So like if people know about things like deliberative democracy, which is in the news at the moment because we've just had a citizen's jury about assisted dying. So that's deliberative democracy. So we were starting to do work around like having a say on the decisions that affect your life and what that meant for your well-being. So how you live a good life. And at the same time, I'd been a carer for quite a long time. I'd helped my mum and dad care for grandparents and then supported my mum while she cared for my dad. And then as Hannah and I came together, her caring role started. We started to bring that personal experience into our thinking. And when we both left the RSA, we still had this idea that, you know, there's something to explore around care, moving beyond how we talk about it now, which is this kind of individualized approach. And we said, actually, this is about big society change, big economic change. And so we were both doing other jobs, but we kept the conversation going. And then we weren't super happy where we'd moved on to. So we just decided to take the plunge at the end of 2023 and left our jobs and set up Careful. And I don't think I wouldn't have done it if it wasn't for Hannah.
In an interview, you said that the social care system we have is almost 100 years old, so a century old, and that it needs to be reformed. Is that your aim?
I think it's part of it, because I think what we speak about is, we talk about how do we create a world where we're able to care for ourselves, one another, and the planet. And where we're at now is we've created an economic model that doesn't actually allow us to do that. It squeezes those things to the edge and makes them almost like add-ons, when really that's life, looking after ourselves, looking after one another, looking after the planet. That's what we should all be doing. But the economic model we have is produce things, make money for usually other people, and all that other stuff gets squeezed to the edge. And what we said, and we talk about the social security system as part of that model, really, which is, there are times where we aren't going to be able to do paid work. And for some people, that might be you'll never do paid work. And there's times in our lives where we don't, when we're children, when we're in education, and when we get older. And the social security system that we've got and has been messed around with quite a lot over the past 100 years, it just isn't fit for purpose anymore. It doesn't take into account the fact that people might need to never work or might need a much greater support to enable them to still live well when they're doing unpaid labour, which, for some people that is care. So we think that that's a big thing. We need to really look at the social security system and move away from this idea of it being a safety net or something temporary. Instead, we should be looking at it as, how does the social security system enable us to live well and enable our lives, whether we are in paid work or not in paid work? Because as we know, paid work actually isn't giving most people enough money to live well anyway. Look at all the people who are working but living in poverty. So the system is broken. So we feel that if we talk about care as a starting point, and think about the social security system as how do we have a social security system that enables us to care for ourselves and one another, what would that mean, rather than you're a nuclear family, you're going to need us for a little tiny bit, maybe when you break your leg or when you get old, but you're only going to be old for 10 years. Well, that's not the case anymore. Oh, people retire and they're around for 30 years. So we just need to rethink it. And you know, care really didn't factor in because the assumption was women would be at home to do that.
So what would a careful society look like?
I mean, it's hard to say because it would only be kind of, you know, my... That's kind of where we're bringing in that idea of having this, creating this space for all of us to talk about what we need. And I think this is, you know, this is where the sort of think tanky stuff comes in as well, is there isn't a one size fits all. And I think in relation to care, that's the approach we've started to go down. So when we talk about unpaid care or people who may be being supported by unpaid carers, the solution that we keep being presented is we just need to, and I'm air quoting here for the people who are listening, fix the social care system, as though if we have a well-functioning social care system, a well-funded NHS, that'll sort it out. Everybody will be able to go back to that binary of you do paid work and we won't need unpaid care and labour. But we know that that's not true because the world is incredibly complicated. So I think that for me is why we need to start the conversation in a different space. We need to move it away from talking about care just in relation to kind of what services can give us. So like what the NHS does or what social care does, because actually for some people who need that extra support, and for some people who are giving it, they don't have any contact with those services at all. So how do we help them? How do we help the people when you've got somebody who doesn't want any outside help and just wants their own family or friends helping them? How do you help people who might be fine most of the time, but then, you know, for the example, you know, my background is mental health. If that acute period comes on, it comes on quick and it comes on fast, and services are slow to respond to that. So it's, you know, so how do we shape our lives so that they're able to adjust to those challenges that we all face? And I think, you know, I think you've had Emily Kenway on before, and Emily's spoken about commons of care. And I think there is a big thing to explore in how do we create these networks that enable us as individuals to support ourselves where we can, and support one another. So it moves away from this binary idea as well of you've got a person giving and a person receiving, because that's not how it works either. You know, me and my sister supported my mum, but she still cared for us. It might have been slightly different, but so I think we have to change that dynamic because people feel really uncomfortable about it, and we're essentially pitting like two groups of people against each other.
Yeah,
and that doesn't help. When really this is about, for us, care is part of everybody's life, full stop. That's just it. It's part of all our lives. Care is part of your life when you're a little kid. Care is part of your life when you're an adult. Care is part of your life when you're an older adult. That's how it is. So how does the economy and society enable and support that? And we think that the current economic model where we talk about economic inactivity, if you are not in paid work, is not helping.
So it's about supporting people to sort of live their best lives, but as a society rather than as individuals, isn't it? Yeah. And it doesn't matter where you are, whether you're needing care or or supporting somebody to have care because you may need that yourself in a different way. So you've really articulated that really well, and I'm so glad you mentioned about economically inactive and my personal favorite, you know, hardworking families, because you know, yes, that's just, yes, all over the economics that we're talking about at the moment.
Absolutely. And it means we end up with the rhetoric about unpaid carers of things like, and I'm sure that this will start everybody who's listening eye twitching when I say it, heroes and angels. Nobody likes it. Unpaid carers don't like it. Disabled people don't like it because it makes them sound like they're burdens. Yeah. And we should just not be talking about it that way. And we shouldn't be talking, you know, it's, you know, if we go back to that economic thinking, you know, there's a lot of work being done by Oxfam and the Women's Budget Group about things like feminist economic thinking and this idea of, you know, I'm into the point now when Hannah and I aren't doing work for Careful, I talk about paid work and unpaid work, because we're still working. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where we're at now. We've got to a place where you're only seen as valuable. And this is where I'm going to get a little bit political, so maybe you might lose half your listeners.
Go ahead.
Not at all.
We are fundamentally only seen as valuable if we are helping a capitalist system, if we are making money for other people. We need to have a big look at employment rights. If you're a working carer, there's a reason 600 people drop out of work every day. Mm. Yeah. And that is because the best we've got is 5 days unpaid leave. Sick pay is not fit for purpose. We don't get substantial leave. We don't even have workplaces that enable disabled people to enter in them. So we just need to start to think, like, if you want people to be economically active, secure, then you need to make workplaces that enable that to happen, and you need to recognise that unpaid care is economic activity.
I think you've written in the past that care can be an opportunity creator. And so is that really what the previous examples that you've just been talking about, is that what you are, I guess, advocating for, that effectively a bit of a fundamental shift in our society to enable us all, no matter what our circumstances are, to live better lives and sort of be considered as a part of our society as a whole, even if we can't work? Is that sort of the shift that you're asking, I guess, government or people to make?
So we don't want to start with the problem. We don't want to say, this is how bad it is now. Mm. What do we need to do to fix this problem? We want to say, what does good look like? What would a good life look and feel like? Mm. And then what needs to happen? And often those things that need to happen are those big socioeconomic shifts. But we can't start from, how do we make the awful a little bit better? We have to start from, let's be bold, let's be optimistic, let's say, let's make things really, really good, and let's strive to get there. And there are lots of people doing amazing things. You know, you've got people like Social Guarantee who are looking at, how do you create universal basic services so that we are guaranteed to have our heating on, we are guaranteed to have broadband, education, health, then we wouldn't need to be having arguments about winter fuel payments.
Mm. How do you approach, you know, this mission to make this a reality? How are we going to move this forward? Because I think, you know, adopting a different measure of our economy would perhaps be an amazing step, wouldn't it? But, you know, how are we going to do this, Ruth?
I mean, I think it is radical. I think it is radical. I actually think it needs to be, because I think too often we've been a little bit nicey-nicey about care. And I think when we want big change, people do radical things. So Hannah and I have, you know, are looking at the solidarity movements from the past of, you know, so if you think about the lesbian and gay rights movements and, you know, they did something radical because they needed big change. And the disability rights movement, again, sometimes when you're overlooked, you have to do something radical, you have to do big change. And I think with care, it's been a little bit nicey-nicey for too long, and we need to talk radically about care. And I think a big part for us is about that solidarity, is how do we bring people together who have got this experience, who it most impacts, and we start to collectively talk about this and start to say, this is the world we want, this is how we want to live. And I think that's about bringing everybody who has a relationship to care together. I think we see a lot more, you know, if you do a job that has care in the title, you're usually low paid. If you have an unpaid relationship with care, you're usually living in poverty. If you're somebody who benefits from care, so if you have, you know, if you're disabled, if you're unwell, or if you're things like if you're a child who is part of the children's social care system, mm-hmm. your life outcomes are worse. So weirdly, care is kind of a bit of a bummer in the current model. So we feel like, you know, actually, and that's why we said about optimistically, is how do we bring people together and say, let's imagine what it would be like if we approach this from a different direction, and if we drive it forward and take control and so I think that's a big thing for us, is that speaking about how we speak about care. Because I think, again, you know, some people don't like the name unpaid carer, and, you know, I don't really, but there's no other way to articulate it. But I think also by articulating it this way, we probably turn people off. And I think how a lot of the big movers and shakers in the space, you know, the big charities who are maybe condition specific charities or carers charities, you know, the images they use, the language they use, I think it makes people, I think one thing it does is make people not recognize themselves. And I think to some degree it kind of scares people into, but also it makes people think, well, what's the point of identifying? Mm. You know, what's the point of identifying? Because there's nothing to help me. And that's why we say, that's why we need this big system change. We need a better social security, because ultimately everybody benefits. If care is part of our socioeconomic model, everybody benefits, because even at the tiniest level, we all care for each other. You know, we're on a daily basis, we're all doing little acts of care, and the difference is sometimes those acts of care get bigger. Mm. You know, it's an ebb and flow through everybody's daily lives. And sometimes that ebb and flow is, you know, so even, you know, I broke my hand earlier this year. So my husband had to care for me, albeit for a much shorter period. That had a big impact on us. So when you suddenly go from four hands in a house, but that made life hard. So people have these little cute moments of care, you know, where you might, you know, break a leg and you're gonna get better, but your life is hard for a short amount of time. So imagine how, well, what if we said, let's make it easy for everybody? I don't see, you know, we wouldn't say to somebody, you're just gonna have to muddle along if you've been diagnosed with cancer, sort of a bit, oh well, never mind. But we seem to think that's okay when we talk about care. So I think that's, you know, it's part of our lives. We have to accept it. And so the system has to radically change for that to happen.
And how do you, so for the system to radically change, I guess you need people to see what good could look like. And yes. from our conversation, it feels like an example of what a form of good could look like would be the Scandinavian countries, maybe. They seem to have better social care. They have a happiness index. They have a year of maternity leave. You know, yes, they have higher taxation, but they actually get benefit from their taxation in terms of enabling their lives to, I guess, be a bit better collectively. Do you speak to your audience about any other examples of what good could look like to bring them along with you? Because I think if it's too nebulous, people might say, oh, well, it's a great idea, but people will never go for it, or the government will never change, or whatever. How do you bring people along with you? And do you have examples that you can share of what good could look like that exist?
We're not saying we've got the answer. We're saying we need to have that conversation. We need to not just say, because, and I think this is the problem we've had in the past, which is we've been told that this is a solution. So we've been told 5 days unpaid leave is a good solution for us. So we have to get behind it. And I'm not having a pop at the big charities, but my point is, if we start from the lived experience and start to have that conversation, we might start to design something more radical, and people might start to come along with, because that's what you find in kind of participatory spaces like citizens' juries, citizens' assemblies. People tend to be a bit more radical themselves when they get given evidence. So if we had a space where people could explore what this care-centred society looked like, and we went, and these are some examples from Sweden, and here's some examples from France, and here's some examples from Costa Rica, and here's some examples from New Zealand, and here's some examples from Japan, and here's some examples from the UK. What do you think? Do you think these would work here? What difference would it make? So we're not just going, this is the answer, kids. This is going to sort us out. Because it'll sort some people out, but it won't sort others out. So that's why it's kind of that, you know, but we want to create that space where people can start to talk about it. And I think for us, it's like giving people the chance to think and know that things can get better and make a massive difference. Mm. If you think, I bet you've both had this experience. Come along and talk to us about being a carer. Tell us how absolutely shit your life is. Not come along and tell us what good looks like. Not come along and tell us what the world should do. But just tell us how bad life is, and then we'll come up with a half-baked idea of how to make it better.
It's so true.
And it's always an individual. It's never a collective. It's never what would difference would it make for us as a complicated family? Just you as an individual, tell us. And that's not what it's like. You have ups and downs. You have good and bad. And you don't get a chance to figure out what good looks like for you as a family. You just get told, yeah. Do you want to go to a carer group? Would that help?
Yeah. Do you want to make a bird feeder out of lolly sticks? That was my particular
wonderful
thing.
But that's not the only answer. We need big system change as well. Everyday changes.
Definitely.
So yeah, sorry, I keep going off on one. Apologies.
No, not at all. It's fascinating. It really is. You know, I think we're drilling down to what your vision, what yours and Hannah's vision is. How do you stay optimistic about this in the face of just like that is so much to change? I mean, I try, but you know, even I'm just like.
I suppose I think Hannah and I, I think we keep each other going in this way, and the world hasn't stayed the same for 100 years. The world has changed, and people have achieved big changes. You know, I mean, I think, you know, I think if you think if you spoke to a black person in the 1930s or a gay person in the 1940s or a disabled person in the 1950s and 1960s and told them what their own communities had achieved, they would be shocked, because we can't imagine a better world, because sometimes we're so in the horribleness. So we take inspiration from those solidarity movements who saw that the world wasn't great but believed it could be better and made it better. And I think that's the thing to always, you know, there's always going to be horrible stuff. It's just how the world is. But if we only focus on the negative, then we'll never make it better. Mm. And that's our approach, really. It can be better, but I think for us, it's an opportunity, and this is as a collective, to start to stand up and demand better.
It's true. I guess I have to remember that, how to stay optimistic, because it's very easy when you're in the weeds to focus on it's never going to change, it can never change, etc. So I think this is, I'll have to remember that, Ruth, when I'm having a bad day. I'll go on your website and read some things. Speaking of, finally, how can we, unpaid carers, not yet carers, everyone, how can we help and support Careful in this caring revolution?
So we're on Instagram, we're on Twitter, X, we're on Blue Sky now. We've just joined Blue Sky, venturing into a new space. We're on LinkedIn, so just look for Careful Economy. We've got a website that we write on, and people just get in touch with us if they want to have a chat, if they want to be involved. And our email is really simple. It's hello@careful.uk.
We could talk to you for hours, Ruth, but we're running out of time. It's always a good indication of, you know, how much we've enjoyed talking to somebody. So thank you so much for speaking to us today.
Thank you so much for inviting me and us as Careful on. We really appreciate it.
And well, thank you, Ruth, again, and thank you so much to everybody for listening. Please follow, rate and subscribe to wherever you get your podcasts.
We'd love to hear from you, whether it's questions, guest suggestions or anything else. Please email us at wearecarers@gmail.com. And until next time.
Until next time.